ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो रीडिंग टुडे फ्रॉम द सिक्स्थ कैंटो चैप्टर नंबर 18 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड दिति वाउस टू किल किंग इंद्र टेक्स्ट नंबर 38 सम्यतद्वचो विप्रो विमानापर्यताप्यता अहो अधर्म सुमहान् अद्य मे समुपस्थितः। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन Upon hearing Diti's request, Kashyapa Muni was very much aggrieved. Alas, he lamented, now I face the danger of the impious act of killing Indra. Purport. Kashyapa Muni was eager to fulfill the desire of his wife Diti. When he heard that she wanted a son to kill Indra, his jubilation was immediately reduced to nothing because he was averse to the idea. Hare Krishna. I'm actually a poor substitute for Radha Gopinath Prabhu, who's actually supposed to give the class today. He's instructed me, so seeking the blessings of all the Vaishnavas assembled over here. So we see over here, Kashyapa Muni is exhibiting all the symptoms, all the qualities of a devotee. Up till now, all the verses that we have been hearing where Diti is requesting Kashyapa Muni through various means at her disposal, trying to impress Kashyapa Muni. Actually, what was there within her heart, she was not revealing to Kashyapa Muni. And Kashyapa Muni, like any husband, was getting led by his wife to follow whatever she was having in her mind. And now he is practically like being hit with a hammer on his head. He's completely shell-shocked when he hears the request that is coming from Diti. So Kashyapa Muni would like to fulfill the desires of his wife. Yeah, and like all husbands would like to do. But in this particular case, as we see in the subsequent verses, he is lamenting to himself that this is the nature of a woman who actually at all times she presents forward as if she is always considering the welfare of her husband, considering the welfare of this world. But then ultimately, she is concerned only about herself. And then he has a plan in his mind that we will see in the subsequent verses. So let us discuss over here this quality of a Vaishnava, quality of a devotee, which is being compassionate. He doesn't want to talk about wanting to kill a person like Indra. A devotee would not even want to hurt a mosquito. Once Srila Prabhupada was getting ready to rest for the night and one of his servants was preparing the bed for him, putting the mosquito net and so on. And just at that time, one mosquito happened to enter into the net that was being readied for Srila Prabhupada. So this servant tried his level best to get this mosquito in his hand so that he could take him out of the net. And Srila Prabhupada was observing him and he remarked, see, this is the quality of a Vaishnava. At one time, the same person would be slaughtering cows in order to satisfy his tongue. And today, he is not even ready to harm a single mosquito. And of course, the same quality was exhibited by Mrigari. when Narad Muni came upon Mrigari, he was actually not even killing animals. He was half killing animals. And just by seeing them in such agony, he was getting so much of ecstasy. There was a book by a very famous author, and the book was entitled Agony and the Ecstasy. What is agony for somebody is ecstasy for somebody else. The nature of this material world. Because we are so envious by nature, when we see others suffering, we are actually very happy. Paradukha Sukhi. So, Mrigari was getting so much of happiness just by seeing these animals who are in such suffering. And then Narad Muni preached to him, and later on, when Narad Muni came subsequently, Mrigari was not even willing to hurt a single ant. When he was paying obeisances with his cloth, he was removing out all the ants from the way, and then he was paying obeisances. And then Narad Muni was glorifying a Vaishnava, saying that this is the quality of a Vaishnava. The same person who was accustomed to half killing animals, he is now not even wanting to hurt a single ant. So on the other hand, we see here the qualities of Diti. And of course, from a mundane perspective, we cannot really be blaming her because she was exhibiting the qualities of a mother. So Diti had two sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. And both were very, very powerful living entities. Very powerful. Hiranyakashipu was seeking immortality. What is ironical is that when Hiranyaksha was killed by Varahadev, and his wife, Hiranyaksha's wife and his children, Hiranyaksha's wife was named Rushabanu, and his children were lamenting over the death of Hiranyaksha. It was actually Hiranyakashipu who went to them and was trying to console them and tell them that actually what is the nature of this body and the soul is such that the body has to die. The soul is eternal. The soul never dies. It just transmigrates from one body to another. He was actually talking Bhagavad Gita to Hiranyaksha's relatives because they were in such great distress. And seeing that they were not getting convinced or they were still in so much of misery, he told them, related to them the story of this king from Ushinara by the name Suyajna, and said how this king, when he was lying down on the battlefield dead, all his wives were gathered around him and they were beating their chest, crying out, not wanting to leave this body to be taken to the crematorium. And at that time, Yamaraj had to, because the time was passing, for the auspicious time for cremating this body was passing, Yamaraj had to take the form of a small boy in order to come and preach to this relatives and tell them that, you know, what's the point in lamenting for a person that's gone, who's already dead? The soul has already left the body, and what you're seeing in front of you is actually a dead body. So, Hiranyakashipu was actually very well aware that he could not get immortality. But still, the nature of a human being is always to become immortal, or try his level best to prolong his life to such an extent as far as possible so that he can never die. Like Lokanath Maharaj was mentioning yesterday, how a person in Nepal at the age of 141 years, considered to be the oldest man in the world, actually till he reached that age, maybe he really wanted to become old. He really wanted to leave. Who wants to die in this material world? Nobody wants to die. Everybody wants to live as long as possible. So this person had reached this ripe old age of 141 years, but then finally, when he reached that age, he was so disgusted with just living for that span of time, that when reporters came and asked him, what is it that you desire? He said, let me die. So Lokanath Maharaj was making a very valid point that ultimately, although a person may want to prolong his life beyond a particular stage, in any case, it doesn't make any difference. It's the same thing. But still, human nature is, somehow or the other, we ensure that we are maintaining this body. Once Srila Prabhupada in 1976 was discussing with his disciples. This was a room conversation. And one of his disciples brought to the notice of Srila Prabhupada that two of the richest men in the world, one was named Paul Getty. He was a multi-billionaire, oil. He had made his fortune in oil. And the other person was Howard Hughes, a very well-known actor, stage personality, and so on. So one of the disciples mentioned that both these men had just died. And he was telling Srila Prabhupada how this Howard Hughes, towards the end of his life, towards the last 8 to 10 years of his life, he was so fanatical and he was so scared of death that he was just trying to protect himself to such an extent that he had moved into an apartment which was completely sterilized. It was completely sanitized, sterilized, and there was not even a single germ that could enter into this apartment. And as in order to serve him, his servant, to serve him his meals 3 times a day, would have to pass through multiple rooms in order to come to the place where this Howard Hughes was staying. And at each room, he had to be wearing more and more highly sterilized clothes. So finally, when he came to this person, he would be completely clean. And Howard Hughes, multi-billionaire, so much of fortune. So the disciple was telling Srila Prabhupada, I don't remember who he was, but he was telling Srila Prabhupada that, see, this person, he had so much of money, but then what is the use? He was living a life which was so much of anxiety, trying to ward off death, somehow or the other. But then finally what happened? He had to die. And Srila Prabhupada heard all this and then commented, oh, so not a single germ was entering into his house, into his apartment. But what about the millions of germs in his body? How could he remove that out? And then Srila Prabhupada moved over to another topic. And also Srila Prabhupada would often tell us this story about a person who, in order to avoid death, was thinking that if Yamaraj comes, then he'll find me so obnoxious that he will not take away my soul. So he would smear himself with stool, with human stool, thinking, I mean, this people go to such an extent that they can't, I mean, they will go to any extent in order to somehow or the other keep themselves from being killed. So we see also in the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam how it is that Gajendra, an elephant, was actually King Indradyumna in his previous life, was also in such a situation where he was almost on the verge of death. For 1,000 years, he was battling with this crocodile. And because the crocodile was in water, in an environment which was favorable to it, the crocodile was very comfortable. And because the elephant was in an environment that he was not comfortable, the elephant was steadily losing its strength. As I was reading this pastime of Gajendra, one thing that really struck me was Gajendra was an elephant who was residing in this near this Trikuta mountain. And the Srimad Bhagavatam gives such an elaborate description of how opulent this particular place is. The Trikuta mountain is a mountain which is 10,000 yojanas tall and 10,000 yojanas wide. So that is 10,000 yojanas means 80,000 miles. One yojana is approximately 8 miles. So 80,000 miles tall. And there were multiple peaks which were made up of gold, silver and iron. And the Bhagavatam describes that as the waters of the milk ocean would be coming onto the bank, they would leave behind emeralds. And this whole place was so wonderfully exotic. Beautiful plants, beautiful trees, beautiful birds would come over there. Thousands and thousands of birds and different types of birds. A pleasure for an ornithologist, person who likes to see birds. Huge number of birds. And they would all come over there and frolic. And actually, Gandharvas, Kinaras, Apsaras, they would all come over there in order to bathe in the lake surrounding this Trikuta mountain. Such an opulent place. And as I was thinking, and this Gajendra was a king of the elephants. He was not an ordinary elephant. As he was walking through the forest, lions and tigers, big animals which could actually kill an elephant, these animals were running away in fear just by getting the smell of Gajendra. And Gajendra was traveling with his entire herd of animals, she-elephants. There must have been other male elephants also. And it is described that Gajendra was actually completely intoxicated. His mouth was dripping liquor. And I was just thinking to myself that how could Gajendra come in contact with liquor? Till I heard Bhagwan Prabhu the other day telling us that in the forest there used to be fruits which these animals would eat. Elephants and monkeys and hogs. They would eat these fruits and become intoxicated. Completely intoxicated. So the nature of a human being is, and what I was thinking is that the surroundings are so intoxicating. Everything is so wonderful. The temperature also must have been at a very ideal temperature where everything is very comfortable. Practically paradise, so to say. And yet, why would somebody imbibe intoxication? And I just started reflecting on this particular point, and I realized that actually, even in this world, in this earthly planet, we see that there are places which are very, very exotic, very beautiful. And although we as devotees, when we would like to go to such place, we would find, you know, that this place is ideal for chanting, increasing our rounds or reading the scriptures. But actually, these places become dens of intoxication. I remember when I was in a company that I was working, we happened to go to a place which was just off Malaysia. This was the first time that I had been over there, and I was not knowing what to expect. Now, this was an island off Malaysia, and it was not such a big island, must be about 20 or 25 square kilometers in size, but extraordinarily beautiful. This place, the temperature was perfect. You were neither too cold nor too warm. You can imagine you were surrounded on all four sides by water. It was a tropical island. Lot of greenery all around. So for a person, such a place, he would come to only for sense gratification. And this particular island was well known for the facilities that it would offer. Super excellent hospitality in terms of accommodation, in terms of restaurants, in terms of hotels, large houses overlooking the ocean, plenty of fruits. Everything was very, very congenial. And we were just there for about 3 days. And the saddest part of the whole thing is that activity would start in this place only at night. Everybody would be in such intense tamagun that at 10 o'clock in the evening, for them it was evening, for us it's late night, we would be already fast asleep at 10 o'clock. But for them, 10 o'clock in the evening, the activity starts in this place. And it goes on till 6 o'clock in the morning. Somehow the fascination of a human being is to stay awake at night. That affords a greater thrill, particularly when he wants to get intoxicated. And the whole night, this place would be teeming with people. Practically in the daytime, you would not see anybody. Whereas I would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do my rounds, there would be absolutely, of the bars, everything would be completely jam-packed. After 6 o'clock, there's nobody out in the streets. They all gone to sleep. They would all wake up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So very opulent place, but entirely devoted to sense gratification. And particularly in Kali Yuga, the more exotic the place is, the more sense gratification is prevalent over there. And what is amazing is that everybody, in spite of the opulence surrounding you, which is already so intoxicating, people would get themselves completely intoxicated. Because apparently, when you get intoxicated, you are able to see things in a greater perspective. Things become more clear to you. Or you are able to relish that same object in a much more intense way. That is why when Srila Prabhupada first went to America, and that was the time when the drug scene was so rampant, over a period of time, people have somehow realized that it's not really good for the health. So we see that it's not so much prevalent nowadays. But in those days, late 60s or early 70s, the drug scene was so rampant. Everybody in America who was below 30 years of age would take drugs, unless there was something wrong with him. Unless he was a freak of nature or whatever. Because it was considered to be the in thing. And what to talk about America, in the place where I was doing my education, even which is a few kilometers from here, there also, it used to be the in thing to be taking drugs. I'm talking about 30 years back. And people would relate the experience after they have taken drugs and say that this is mind-blowing, you know, it's really, I'm feeling completely free and relaxed in my mind. And the terminology was stay high forever. Right? Stay high forever. Try to stay high forever. But then, in this material world, nothing is permanent. Everything is temporary, including your high. You get a high and then you have to come down back into the material world. Srila Prabhupada taught us how to stay high forever by the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So this intoxication apparently enhances your senses to such an extent that you are able to enjoy. Ultimately, everybody is seeking enjoyment. So you are trying to enjoy your senses to a much greater degree. So in this place, which is called as Lankavi, you have abundant opportunities for intoxication, all varieties of intoxication. So this Gajendra was also like this, completely intoxicated with just being in this association of all these elephants, and just the power was giving him so much of intoxication that he was such a powerful entity that even the lions and tigers would run away from him. And Bhagavatam describes that all the small animals, they were feeling very protected when Gajendra was there. So he came and then he got caught by this elephant and they were battling for 1,000 years with each other. And then finally when the elephant realized, Gajendra realized that there was no alternative, that he couldn't do anything. He didn't want to die. Who wants to die in this world? So he also didn't want to die. So when the time came, when he realized that everything is now beyond his ability to do anything, for 1,000 years he fought with this crocodile, thinking that he would be in a position to win. But then when he realized that nothing could be done, that was the time when he reached out to Krishna, Narayan. And of course, because of his, we understand that because he was given this knowledge when he was cursed, that he would take this body of an elephant. At that time he was also given the knowledge that he would, at an appropriate time when he would need it, he got this knowledge that he was a devotee of the Lord, and he started worshipping. And he, beautiful, beautiful prayers he was narrating in praise of the Lord. So the nature of a human being and the nature of a living entity in this material world is somehow or the other protect oneself. And Diti wanted a person who was immortal, so that through that person, Indra could be killed. somehow through that person, Diti wanted to have the satisfaction of killing Indra. So today is also the appearance day or the birthday of Ganesh. I just thought we'll spend a few minutes talking about Lord Ganesh. Lord Ganesh, devotees realize that he is a worshipable demigod. Yeah? And although most people approach Lord Ganesh with the desire to have material opulence, which ultimately what it means is that they want to extend their lifespan in order to enjoy all these material facilities. They approach Lord Ganesh for greater and greater material wealth. And Lord Ganesh fulfills the desires of people when they approach him for material opulence. But actually, Lord Ganesh is a devotee, and we all understand what sort of a devotee he is. He's not an ordinary devotee. When Vedavyas wanted that the scriptures be transcribed, be written down, he got Lord Ganesh to come and do it for him. And at that time, Lord Ganesh had made a condition that he would write the scriptures very fast. And the moment Vedavyas were to stop at a particular point, and Ganesh had already completed what he had said, then he would stop writing. He would not write anymore. And Vedavyas agreed to this. But he said that, let me put forward my condition. And the condition is that you shall write only those things that you understand. So this is a very important thing for all of us to know, that whatever Ganesh was writing was something that he had assimilated. He had understood the complete purport of each and everything that he was writing. And for all of us, knowledge of the scriptures means understanding what is the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And what is his position? And what is his our relation to him? That of the servant of the servant of the servant. So Ganeshji understood that his constitutional position was that of the servant of the servant of the servant. So although a non-devotee may worship Ganesh for material opulence, trying to get as much of material opulence from him as possible, but a devotee understands that actually Lord Ganesh is not very happy giving these opulences, because he's a devotee of the Lord. He has understood the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam. So how will he ever be satisfied by giving material opulence to anybody? Of course, when devotees approach him for material opulence so that they can engage it in the service of Lord Krishna, then he would be very happy to give such material opulences. Of course, devotees don't approach him for such material opulences, because when he can approach Krishna, why do we approach Ganapati? Why do we approach Ganesh? So devotees understand that we approach Ganesh so that he can remove all our obstacles from the path of devotional service. That's why we have the statue of Lord Ganesh outside our temple. So when we enter into the temple, we first pay our obeisances to Lord Ganesh and request him from the bottom of our heart to give us facilities whereby we can progress in our devotional service. That Lord Ganapati is very happy to give. Because since he knows that he is the servant of the servant of the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when a Vaishnav comes and requests him for facilities so that he can make progress in his spiritual life, Ganapati is very happy to give you such facility. So that is a proper understanding of how we can worship Ganesh. Which unfortunately in this age of Kali Yuga, we find that people, because they are not... They're not actually wanting to die. They don't want to die. They want to somehow or the other prolong their life. And within that prolonged life, they want to remain as materially comfortable as possible. So they go to Lord Ganapati and ask him for all sorts of material opulences, which at times he gives, but he's not very happy doing it. So a lot of times we come across people who tell us that we have been worshipping Lord Ganapati in our house for so many years, in fact for generations. So how do we stop the worship of Lord Ganapati? So we tell them, of course, you should worship Lord Ganapati. But you have to understand in what relation or what context we have to worship Lord Ganapati. Not as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You cannot give that position to Ganapati because that would be an insult to him. He would consider it very, very offensive in case you worship him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we have to worship him as a servant of the servant of the servant. A lot of times people come to us saying that we already have this Vigraha of Lord Ganapati that we have been worshipping in our house. What do we do about that now? So the true understanding is that the position of Ganapati is lower than that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when we have an altar at home where we have, because of social requirements, ideal thing is not to have, but if out of social requirements we should have, then we have to understand that the position of Ganapati on the altar should be lower than that of Krishna. That is a place where he feels most comfortable and he would be the happiest being situated in that place. So from that point of view, it's a very special occasion today that you're worshipping the appearance of a servant of the servant of Lord Krishna. And we get invited to devotees to the homes of people whom we know, who worship Ganapati at their homes. This is a good opportunity for us to preach to them, to explain to them what is the true position of Ganapati, what is the true position of Ganesh, and how Ganesh can actually contribute to helping you in your spiritual life. He is Sukaharta Dukaharta. He's a remover of obstacles from your life. So we also would like to have obstacles removed. Not that we are concerned to live a very long life. Ultimately, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we all realize that a very long life in this material world is really of no great consequence. Ultimately, we are not looking at quantity, but we are looking at quality. We want to remember Krishna at the time of death. So whether death comes to us today, or whether it comes to us tomorrow, or in a few weeks, or few months, or few years, it's really of no consequence. Our only prayer should be that we always remember Krishna, particularly the time of death. So from the pages of the scriptures, we understand that great devotees of the Lord are really not concerned whether they are, even if they are put in such situations where they are practically on the verge of death, they are remembering Krishna at that time. We see from the pages of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the pastime of Gopinath Patanayaka and his whole family. Now, Gopinath Patanayaka was the servant of a king. He was actually a zamindar or some such position he was having. And over a period of time, he owed the king a certain amount of money. And when the king came to know about this, he sent his son, the prince, to recover this money from Gopinath Patanayaka. Now, Gopinath Patanayaka did not have the money at that point of time. So he offered to the prince that I have a few very, very excellent, super excellent horses. So you can take these horses and set it off against the loan that I owe to the government. Now, this king, this prince was a very funny person and very envious. So he did not want to give Gopinath Patanayaka a true value for the horses. So he quoted a sum which was far below the actual value. And Gopinath Patanayaka refused. And not only did he refuse, he actually insulted the prince. Because this prince had a very funny idiosyncrasy. He always had a habit of looking up like this, pointing his face up to the sky. And Gopinath Patanayaka was seeing this and he said, let me teach him a good lesson. And then he said that my horses do not look like you up into the ceiling every now and then. And this really made this prince very, very angry. When you have a particular weakness, if that particular weakness is exhibited in front of others or told in front of others, then actually you're going to feel very hurt about it. And after all, he's a prince. And this fellow, this Gopinath Patanaika, is just an ordinary zamindar. So immediately he went to the king, King Pratapudra, and told him that this Gopinath Patanaika, actually, you know, he's not ready to pay you the money. He's on the contrary, he's saying so many things about you and so on and so forth. And then the king said, okay, you do whatever you want in order to recover the money. And the prince decided to put Gopinath Patanaika on the changa. Changa is a very special means of killing a person in those days. They would dig a hole, and in that they would be planting swords, which are pointed up towards the sky. And from the platform, they would throw a person onto the swords. It meant instant death. So Gopinath Patanaika was put onto the changa. And then all the devotees, when they came to know about it, immediately they went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said, my dear Lord, this, please do something. Gopinath Patanaika is in danger. So the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, so what happened? I mean, why exactly is he like this? And then they related the whole story. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, so he deserves what he is getting. He's actually trying to cheat the government. Why should he cheat the government? If you cheat the government, then this is what you will get. I can't do anything about this. And suddenly at that particular point of time, somebody else came and said, my dear Lord, the whole family of Gopinath Patanaika have now been arrested. Vaninatha Rai and all his brothers, everybody have been arrested. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what can I do? And he told the devotees that, okay, there's only one thing at this point of time, just pray to Jagannath. And if your prayers are really intense, then Jagannath will listen to you, and whatever he wants to do, he will do. And then just at that time, one of the servants of Maharaj Pratapudra went to him and told him that, see, this is what is actually happening. Gopinath Patanaika is now being put on the changa by your son. Acha, he's put on the changa? Why should he be put on the changa? And actually this person tried to explain to the king, King Maharaj Pratapudra, that what's the point in killing him? If you kill him, then you're not going to get your money back in any case. The government will be the net loser. He said, yes, yes, what you say is right. He said, in any case, I did not plan that he should be on the changa. Just get him down. And then the servant went running back and told the prince that he should be brought down from the changa. Gopinath Patanaika was brought down from the changa. And then after all the devotees went back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and related to him that, my dear Lord, everything is okay now. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked a very pointed question. So he said, when Vaninatha Rai was actually arrested, what did he do? And then the devotees very, very happily told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Vaninatha Rai was actually loudly chanting out the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased hearing this. So the nature of the devotee is that when he has difficulties and such intense difficulties like Vaninatha Rai, when he was seeing that his son, Gopinath Patanaika, was practically on the verge of death, he was actually reaching out to Krishna, chanting the holy names intensely. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased. And similarly, Haridas Thakur, when he was beaten in 22 marketplaces by these two demoniac executioners who were so sturdy and who were so strong, and Haridas Thakur, although of course at that time he was quite young and quite muscular, but still he was no match for these executioners, and nobody had ever survived more than one or two marketplaces. But for 22 marketplaces, Haridas Thakur was being beaten. And all the time he was praying to the Lord that, my dear Lord, please save them, because they don't know what they are doing. Please forgive them. And finally, at the end of the 22 marketplaces, when these two executioners saw that Haridas Thakur was not dying, he was absolutely normal, hale and hearty. Then these executioners really got worried and said that, if, my dear Haridas Thakur, if you are going to be like this, then we are going to die. The king is going to kill us, the Nawab or whoever. So Haridas Thakur, so compassionate, he said, oh, if that is the thing, then I will leave my body. And then Haridas Thakur went into Samadhi. And then they dragged Haridas Thakur's body before the Nawab and said that this this Haridas Thakur is now dead. And then Haridas Thakur ordinarily would have been buried because he was a Muslim. But then one of the Qazis said that if he is buried, then he will go to the heavenly planets. He will go to heaven. So don't bury him. Throw him into the Ganges. Which is actually, I was just thinking when I was reading this pastime, what would have happened if Haridas Thakur was there 6 feet below the ground? How he would have been able to come out? But then Krishna arranged everything so wonderfully that Haridas Thakur was actually put into the Ganges. He was chained and put into the Ganges. And Haridas Thakur came out of his samadhi and came back to the Nawab to say that I am perfectly all right. Then the Nawab recognized him to be a very great soul. So Haridas Thakur also exemplified this particular quality of completely taking shelter of Krishna at this most crucial time in his life, when he was hammered like this. Jesus Christ also, the same. Saktavesh Avatar, Srila Prabhupada said that he is a Saktavesh Avatar. He is the son of God, bona fide. He was preaching the true message of God. Srila Prabhupada had a very, very high regard for those Christians who were following the Catholic faith very, very strictly. And although, of course, Srila Prabhupada, whenever he would come across this representatives from the Christian community, very senior people from the priestly class, Srila Prabhupada would ask them that, how is it that you are deviating from the instructions of God? One of the instructions is thou shalt not kill, but then you are actually killing so many living entities, and you are actually satisfying your tongue because of that. They would not have any answer to what Srila Prabhupada said, and quite a number of them would actually concur with what Srila Prabhupada said. Yes, what he says is true, but this is something that we have been doing for so many years, so many lifetimes, and so many generations. So Srila Prabhupada also could see that in the Christian community also, there was a section of people who are genuine devotees of the Lord. Because Jesus Christ himself was preaching the message of God, which is pure. And for those who could accept that message of God, which was pure, then they could also apply that in their lives and become pure. We also see from the life of Srila Prabhupada himself, Tamal Krishna Maharaj in his pastimes, the final pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, TKG Diary. All of us should actually read that book. Really a very graphic account of how Srila Prabhupada, towards the end of his pastimes here on this planet Earth, he was in such perfect consciousness. Of course, he tried his level best to prolong his life because he knew that that would be good for the mission. Was consulting so many astrologers and all that. But finally, Srila Prabhupada was transcendental to all these things. He was doing it only for the welfare of human society, doing it for the welfare of all of us. On his own, he was not really concerned whether his life was prolonged or not. But he would take whatever medicines were given to him by his disciples, and particularly towards the final days, Srila Prabhupada would become so emotional. When Srila Prabhupada was preparing to go to London, sometime in the month of August, just a couple of months before he left his body, he was so enthusiastic. And just at that time, two of his very intimate disciples had come back into the movement, Gaurasundar and Madhu Dvisa. And he was so happy. He said, everything is now looking so nice in our movement. Gaurasundar has come back, Madhu Dvisa has come back. And Srila Prabhupada, actually, when Madhu Dvisa came before Srila Prabhupada, he was one of the leading sannyasis of our movement. And that was the time, in fact, when Srila Prabhupada was writing the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Gajendra Moksha pastimes. And Srila Prabhupada, in one of the purports, writes over there that really, when we are in difficulty, and that was the time when he was writing about this crocodile and the elephant, and the crocodile catches hold of Gajendra. So So Srila Prabhupada writes that devotees of the Lord have to actually take strength in order to withstand the effects of the material nature. And Srila Prabhupada said in the purport that it is not really of importance whether you are a sannyasi or whether you are a grahastha. If you are not able to maintain the vows of a sannyasi, become a grahastha, no problem. But the fight should continue on. We have to continue to fight the crocodile of this material nature. So Srila Prabhupada was not so much concerned what ashram a particular person. Yes, he did make his disciples into sannyasis. And I once remember I was discussing with one devotee. In fact, I was participating in a conversation between two devotees, and one devotee was saying that why did Srila Prabhupada award sannyas to all this when it is actually said that you should not be awarding sannyas in the age of Kali Yuga, and that too to all this Western bodied people who have got no control over their senses. Why did Srila Prabhupada give them all this sannyas diksha? And the other devotee was saying something which really struck me as very, very must have been a really the clear understanding of Srila Prabhupada on this particular subject. He said that these devotees, of course, from one perspective, they were not qualified to be getting sannyas. But at that time, there was a need for preachers to be having this particular ashram so that they could go out and preach. And whatever advancement they made in that few years that they were sannyasis is multiplied hundreds of times as compared to a person who was not in that ashram. Because they did tremendous amount of preaching. So when Madhu Dwisa came before Srila Prabhupada, a sannyasi, Srila Prabhupada asked him, how's your wife? It's normally one would have expected that, you know, first of all, when a sannyasi who's had a fall down and who had actually because of that fall down, there was a tremendous disturbance in the society that was created at that particular point of time because he was a very leading, very powerful sannyasi. Still, Srila Prabhupada was so compassionate and said, yes, my dear son, now that you have come back, I'm so happy. Just continue to practice Krishna consciousness. In whatever ashram you're belonging to, it really doesn't matter. This was the compassion of Srila Prabhupada. He was ready to tolerate anything, any deviation from our side. Absolutely no problem. And for a sannyasi to fall down into grahastha ashram is like eating its own vomit. I mean, there's no greater fall down than that. But Srila Prabhupada was ready to tolerate even that and said, yes, please come. Forget about whatever has happened in the past. Just chant and associate with devotees and lead a life of pure Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada was so happy. He was in such ecstasy when Madhu Dwisa came before him. And Gaurasundar, he was one of his earliest disciples. Gaurasundar and his wife Govindadasi, they were like very, very intimate with Srila Prabhupada. And Govindadasi and Gaurasundar were actually his secretaries. So the moment, and actually what had happened was Gaurasundar had left Govindadasi and married somebody else. But even that Srila Prabhupada did not mind. He asked Gaurasundar, what happened to Govindadasi? And Tamal Krishna Maharaj writes that particular situation became a little bit awkward at that time. But Srila Prabhupada's heart was so large, he said, okay, forget about whatever has happened in the past, just come. And this was when Srila Prabhupada was practically getting prepared to leave his body. He had not eaten for 6 months. Went to London, so much of difficulties over there. So showing by their own example, these great devotees, that finally at the time when it comes for us to leave our bodies, we have to be mentally prepared. Forget about everything else. Try your level best to forget it. Associate with devotees who will remind you that the goal of life is to go home back to Godhead. And this is a fantastic opportunity for us. Our own God brother, Stoka Krishna Prabhu. We all knew Stoka Krishna Prabhu for so many years. Of course, nobody would have even thought that he would leave his body at such a young age. Nobody was anticipating. But when the time came for him and he realized that there's nothing that could be done, medicine had no cure for his illness, and his illness had developed into such a critical stage where there was nothing that could be done. At that time, Stoka Krishna Prabhu realized, yes, now this is the time when I can perfect my life by going home back to Godhead. And he was there in the hospital, getting all the necessary palliative care so that he could be comfortable. But he preferred to leave that and come over to the temple. He wanted to be in the association of devotees. He wanted to be in the place where he had spent so much of quality time associating with a spiritual master. And all of us were so much enthused when we saw Stoka Krishna Prabhu. Of course, we were very much pained. I mean, there was a lot of heartbreak that we are losing our God brother. But here was a person who was really getting himself prepared to go home back to Godhead, to leave this body, to go to a higher destination. Absolutely. Cutting off all detachments. It gave us so much of inspiration, right? That hopefully one day, if we are fortunate, it's not that it's necessary that just because we are here today in the association of devotees, when we leave our body, we could be in the association. We need to be in the association of devotees. We have to be careful, very, very careful. But if you have the mercy of the Vaishnavas, if you have the mercy of the spiritual master, and if you are following the process sincerely and carefully, like Srila Prabhupada would say, that you just be connected with ISKCON, you have a chance to go home back to Godhead in the same lifetime. Just be connected. So this is the benediction that Srila Prabhupada has given us. Made the whole process so simple, so easy, so practical. Just remain connected with the movement, just remain connected with the devotees, and you will go home back to Godhead. And we have Srila Prabhupada, the Param Guru, Jagat Guru, telling us this, giving us this guarantee through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam that you don't have anything to worry about. Just be in the association of devotees. Don't commit apradh to Vaishnavas. Chant the holy names of the Lord. Acquire, get a taste for chanting the holy names of the Lord. Not just chanting for the sake of chanting. Try and really work upon getting a genuine taste for chanting the holy names. Then Krishna will reciprocate. Yeta mam prapadyante tamstateva bhajamyaham. Why not? Why should he ditch us at the moment when we require him the most? It's not possible. When the mundane friends of this world, sometimes they give us so much of support. Forget about devotees. Even mundane friends, our neighbors sometimes give us so much of support in times of need. And here we are talking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why should he ditch us at the time when we require him the most? Not possible. So we have everything to perfect our life. Complete opportunity is given to us by Srila Prabhupada. It's up to us to take this opportunity and perfect our life and go home back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Sorry, Gopinath Prabhu. Yes, Maharaj. Can you wait for the mic?
Does Lord Ganesha has the power to remove spiritual obstacles? I was told Lord Ganesha only removes material obstacles. Spiritual obstacles, only Lord Narsingdev has the power to remove.
I don't know. Gopinath Prabhu, would you like to?
Ultimately, it's Krishna who does everything. This is my understanding. But he does it through those who become an instrument in his hands. In the spiritual master or any devotee can remove obstacles if he is empowered by the Lord. Krishna Shakti Bina Nahi Tar Pravartan. And because, just like a demigod is a servant of the Lord, and if you approach them like Lord Shiva, he is Ashutosh. If you go to him with a material aspirations, they are bound to fulfill, so they fulfill. But when you approach them with a feeling that I am fool number one, I don't know what's best for me, you give me what you think is best, then they give you what they think is best. I generally in my Gita course quote this. If you go to Hanumanji and ask for some material benedictions, Ashta Siddhi Nava Nidhikiya Data Asavar Dina Janaki Mata. Hanuman Chalisa says, Ashta Siddhi Nava Nidhi. He can give you all Ashta Siddhi. He has this. He became smaller than the smallest. He became larger than the 100 yojanas. He became heavier than the heaviest. Bhima could not lift his tail also. He has all the siddhis, and he can give you. But when you approach and say, I'm fool number one. I've been offering oil every Saturday. But you please give me what you think is best. And what he thinks is best, and what is close to his heart, he is revealed in his heart. He's torn his chest to show what is in his heart, whom he worships in his heart. So, that's true with every other devatas also. When we approach them with a material desire, they give what we want. But when we helplessly approach and sincerely pray for what, then they give what we need. And that is what they appreciate the most in their heart, what they also know. So, empowered by the Lord, they can give you what you want, and if you approach with sincerity, they will give you what you need. Ultimately, it's coming from Krishna, obviously. Sataya shaddhaya yuktas tasya radhanam ihate labhate cha tatah kaman mayaiva vihitan hitan. In the 7th chapter, Krishna says this. Ultimately, everyone, whatever they are able to offer, is coming from Him alone. And they are empowered to give. So, it depends how we approach them. Yes, yat pada pallava yugam vinidhaya kumbha dvandve pranama samayesa vighnan vihantu malamasya jagat trayasya. They remove all obstacles, but what kind of obstacles you want to remove, that's up to you to ask.
Thank you very much, Gopinath Prabhu. He is our eternal savior in all respects. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande.
At last you made me give my class.